You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 192. Van Burnett joined, as always, by Steve Gisuelli. Steve, we're in September. You're still alive in the semifinals of your home league. We've got a fun show tonight. We're going to be looking at, it's kind of a hybrid, right, of what's relevant now versus the main show title topic of predicting 2026 SP risers. So it's a nice compromise because I'm already looking ahead to next season, whereas you're still in the midst. So most of these guys are on this list because they're rostered and surging, but some newer names that we haven't talked about on the show to date, and kind of the impetus of the show is trying to get out in front of what we see as a trend every year, which is starting pitchers that have a certain ADP in October, November, and then by the time March rolls around, the hype train has taken off and their ADP can go low, right? And we've seen the type in the past, so it's going to be fun to get into these guys. We got about 10 names we're going to talk through. It's always fun talking about pitching. We got to stop ourselves just because it's an hour show. But Steve, good to see you. I know we were talking offline, but happy playoffs, man. You're in the thick of it. How's life?
Yeah, it's intense. You're living and dying with every at bat and every single start. Funny, we're talking about pitching when I have a 7.47 ERA for 21 innings to start my
flying high
my matchup this week. But somehow the bats are carrying me so far, but still got a long way to go. So it's been fun. It's been intense, and it's a fun. There's nothing like at-bat playoffs. You know, we say this every year when we're in it, and It's just especially in your home leagues when you have close bonds with the guys that you're going up against, and there's history and all that. So it's fun, and you know, a lot of this does tie into the topic because a lot of these guys are people that are unexpected playoff contributors, right, for fantasy purposes. And because of that, you know, they leave an impression on certain people, and they help boost their ADP or are in the front of mind to come draft season. Like I remember last year, like Landon Raup or Roop was that guy for me, right? And mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he was pretty good. I know he's hurt now, and overall in the year, he had on the entire year had a pretty good year. But that's the type of player that. At least was the inspiration, at least a little bit, for this show. I think there's some guys that have probably more hype than this. Some guys that, you know, as we were preparing for this off air and our little talk before the show, maybe have too much hype and maybe aren't some of this. So, you know, I think it's sort of like an early look at the starting pitcher landscape, at least, you know, the beyond the top 20 or so, right? Because, you know, the top 20 is the top 20. You're going to like who you like, and those guys are there for a reason. These guys are more guys that were like, hey, this is interesting. Where is his ADP going to be next year?
Right.
Yeah. Probably with a lean towards up arrow, but we'll see. We'll see if we agree on all these guys. I feel like we may have some differences there.
Yeah, but I think it's a good point that these are ones that it's kind of a mixture, right? It's like if you switched off and you weren't paying attention late in the season, a lot of these names are guys who have had strong second halves or at least strong August, September. Mm-hmm. So far, obviously, just a couple days into September. But the Helium prototype, it kind of depends because my first gut reaction was kind of that this would be the Spencer Schwellenbach or Shane McClanahan, Shane Boz, like guys that
Sandy Alcantara a few years ago, I remember.
Yeah, you know? yeah, for sure. But guys that it's almost like they're not even sleepers anymore. They're the wide awake sleepers or the ones that, you know, everyone in the industry, there's kind of the group think on. I think the cool part about these names is there are some ones that are worthy of debate and worthy of kind of breaking down and analyzing. So should be a lot of fun. Good luck in the home league stuff. Sal was an absolute character when I went out to your wedding. So I love hearing that. And it made me think real quick, not to dwell. Next year is 25th anniversary of my home league. And the Rat Pack is already revving up for a road trip where we've never flown somewhere. And my brother and I are going to work on a little documentary fully shot on an iPhone. We've done some filmmaking in our own time of the league's history. And at the minimum, Steve, I'm going to need an excerpt from you talking about my home league, of which you have no knowledge of, but you know about the Goon Squad. And at the most, I might need you to sneak away for like some Tampa flight trip and join us for the first ever road trip. We'll table that for the off season, but I needed to plant the seed because there's a lot of hype and you got me thinking about it with Sal. So we'll put a pin in that. But I'll leave you a quick chance to comment there just for a gut reaction, and then we'll get into player number one here.
Whatever you need for that, count me in.
Love it. Love to hear it. Okay, so Steve, we got a pair of Mets here right out of the gate. And first one, Jonah Tong, that number four prospect for the Mets. I believe we've just seen one start for Tong up in the majors. Is that right? Yeah, just one start so far, but a very good start where he allowed just one run or one earned run, four runs, but six strikeouts across five innings. This is one that, forget what I said before the show or during the setup, because I think Jonah Tong will be a classic helium riser type of guy. Because for me, Steve, the first thing I see is when there's a 7-foot extension, I go straight to, all right, what is it, like a 92-mile-per-hour fastball? What are we working with? Sitting 95-4 and also has a pretty good change and curve in terms of the Fangraph stuff, just 22 years old. I think this is one, when you look at what he's done so far this year in the minors, pair it with the opportunity. He's had enough volume on his arm this season with 113 innings in the minors and now one start in the bigs. I think Jonah Tong is a great one in terms of the true name of the show, that like whatever he's at in October, I think his ADP, so long as there's health, will be a 20-30% jump. And I will probably be one of the ones that is in on that, because he's got all the recipes that I look for with the extension, with you know, a strong fastball. It's such a good foundation. It's like the Brian Wu thing. So really like this one. Talk to me about Jonah Tong. You're a little bit closer to Mets land out there, but how's the hype? What do you think on Jonah Tong?
Yeah, you're a little extension hoarder there. It's your weakness, right?
It is. Look
for a guy with a good fastball and good extension, and you're more or less going to be in. That being said, it's pretty exciting. I mean, just the strikeout numbers in the minor leagues for Tong this year have just been absolutely incredible. It's super impressive what he's done, and just at such a young age too, just going but cruising through the minors. Like, his first minor league pitch was in 2023. I know it's more common nowadays, especially with pitchers, right? Because organizations don't want to waste bullets in the minors, just with, you know, the inevitability of injury that comes for, you know, most pitchers. Not saying that Tong is, you know, going to get injured here any day now. It's just, that's how, organizations treat top arms, right? Like, if they seem like they're ready, they're up at the big leagues. I mean, it just absolutely insane K percentages, right? Like, there hasn't been one like below like the mid 30s, like, right? He had a 30% strikeout rate in single A last year in 85 innings. That was like his worst K percentage.
What was the high watermark this year? Because I know it averaged out to 40.5% K rate.
Yeah. In 102 double innings, so repeating double A, he had a 40.8% strikeout rate. Yeah.
I mean, come on. So, I'm pulling it up now. Good radio. But I just wanted to look at his actual like prospect grades on those pitches. So I almost feel like they're underselling a little bit. The 55 grade fastball, 55 curveball, but I mean, with a 40% strikeout rate, like, what's, doesn't add up really.
Yeah, it doesn't add up. And you know, maybe some of that's like the actual velocity on it and some of the stuff and the eye test, but with how funky Tong is, and this is not like a bold take or like an original take, but he looks like Lincecum, right? It's low hanging fruit, but that's exactly what he looks like, right? Like that wonky, twisty, over the top, you know, herky jerky motion that somehow looks smooth, right? In a way, like it's crazy how that sort of motion like looks like it works, like it did for Lincecum, and it does for Tong. Yeah, this looks like Lincecum that throws, you know, 95 consistently and prime, you know, at least just from the looks of it. I'm not, you know, Lincecum's peak was one of the best peaks that we've seen in the last 15 years of baseball, right? Those two back-to-back Cy Young years that he had. Mm-hmm. So that's a tall comparison or large shoes to fill, but that's what he looks like. And honestly, it's pretty exciting. And if you asked me before these few starts here with the Mets over the last few weeks for both these guys, I was more excited about Tom because it looked like there was a bit better command. You know, the strikeout rates were higher, like the funkiness to his delivery. And long term, I think I still prefer Tong over versus the next guy that we're going to talk, even though right now that may look like a bit of a hot take with how good this guy's been that we're about to talk about.
Yeah, that's fair. I was just having fun. Like, I love when there's no ADP to kind of cheat off of. So I was trying to go to last year's ADP and just see for a guy that had a really short track record, but a ton of buzz or hype. And it's kind of, I mean, like Shane Baz in the month of March had risen up to 213. And like, we know that pick 200 area, that's where, if you remember how excited we were about like Gavin Williams, he eclipsed the 200 mark and ended up at like a 185, obviously didn't have the season we're all hoping for. But I wonder if that feels like the range, like is Tong going to be, he's 46% rostered right now, obviously big market. You know, big savant sliders, big K percentage in the minors and a prospect pedigree. Do you think he's like a 170 to 200 type of ADP by the end of it?
Maybe that's where he'll start. I don't know.
Because it
comes with the big prospect pedigree, right? Boz had that, but like, oh, he looked healthy, but the Ks weren't fully there. Like, you know, is this stuff going to come back? There were some question marks. Like, if Tong, I guess a lot depends on these last few starts, right? Like, if he gets lit up, yeah, sure, maybe he'll start in the, you know, 250 range and then work his way up. But if he goes out and dominates for the month of September, that might be a starting point, and then he sort of rises into, like, that 150 range.
Yeah. And I guess last year, Baz had about 120 innings. So volume is similar. Yeah. I think that's the general range, but I definitely foresee him as being one that shoots up draft boards, but it's a good point that the rest of September will be almost more telling for Tong than any of the other players, 'cause he's got the least track record. Jumping over to his teammate, Nolan McLain, 24 years old, number three prospect, so just right next to each other. This almost has a little bit of, dare we say, DeGrom Syndergaard type of, you know,
Harvey,
coming up in pairs. Oh man, that was such a time for baseball.
Yeah.
So McLain, a little bit different of a profile, like still really good K percentage at a 29.5%. Less extension, much more of a ground ball pitcher with a 66% ground ball rate through four starts, 26 innings. McLain has 28 strikeouts, a 1.37 ERA, and a 0.7 whip. So I think McLain is, there's a lot more of like a pitcher's pitcher here so far in terms of not only the command, but also the ground ball rate. And I was impressed, Steve. You know, speaking of Schwellenbach, it reminds me, like, when you see these youngsters, you kind of, go right to the pitch mix and you're like, okay, do they have two and they need to develop a third, or maybe three good pitches, they need to develop a fourth. This dude throws four pitches 15% of the time or more and mixes in a change in a cutter after.
And they're all good, right? They're all good.
Yeah, like what it's a lot of it is reminiscent of what we were saying with Schwellenbach, of like, what, how do you poke holes in what we're seeing here? It looks way more polished than a guy who's, you know, got four starts and is 24 years old. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Good swing, really good swing and miss on the curveball. His four seamer, which he throws the least out of his big four pitches, has a 44% whiff rate, obviously small sample size, but like what, a 25% whiff rate is like excellent for a fastball. And he's got 44%. So yeah. Talk to me here about Nolan McClain, and yeah, interesting that you said maybe still Tong over him, because I'm excited about both of these guys, just kind of in a different archetype.
Yeah, super exciting pitcher, and I think that maybe I wasn't as hyped as I should have been. As Jordan said in the chat here, McClain was a two-way hit player just up until last year, and he was pretty good in the minors. He's got DH eligibility in ESPN. Let's see him hit. I mean, hey, I'm for it. That's you know, if the Mets want to do like a mini Ohtani thing. I don't know. It's just absolutely crazy. Like, the reason why I had some hesitation with McClain is that I thought the command was a little less of a sure thing than with Tong, but that's clearly hasn't been the case. I think he hasn't walked a batter in his last two starts. McClain hasn't, that is. So it's crazy impressive. Like, he kind of talked about how he trusts the defense more at the major league level and is able to just throw more strikes, and then, you know, that contributes to better command, right? There's also the fact that there was the automated balls and strikes and at AAA that could lead to a little bit of an elevated walk rate, though he did have, you know, higher walk rates at lower stops in the minors too. So I don't know. It's just super, super impressive in the plane. Like, every pitch looks really good. Like, you, I don't know, did you see that like Jason Benetti clip when he faced the Tigers the other day? It was the, you know, the Tigers announcers were just like looking at McClain's stuff and just were like absolutely disgusted in slow motion. They're like, what is this? Like, it was such a good clip. You know, if you haven't seen it, look it up real quick. It's so good. But yeah, what's so impressive is, like, you know, a lot of the guys have like that one, you know, one pitch that's their money pitch, right? And that's kind of all they have. And, you know, sometimes they start off hot. Like, you think of like Chris Paddock with that changeup, right? That first year. There's countless other examples where, you know, they get by because this one pitch is so good. Then the league catches up. McClain has that in that curveball. It has a 179 stuff plus. I've never seen a pitch with that high of a stuff plus, or at least it's got to be close. He has that one amazing pitch.
Yeah.
He has four other pitches that are above average by stuff plus. It's absolutely crazy. You know, he could throw the sinker for strikes. He throws the cutter for strikes too. I know it's not it's a smaller part of his arsenal, but he does have pitches that he can strike. And it's just super, super impressive what he's been able to do so far. And this is like one of those where it's like, okay, if he has two or three more starts, like, he may be close to like Schwellenbach territory for last year, right? When we bought into Schwellenbach after basically like an August and September, right? I think Schwellenbach was maybe a little bit earlier, closer to the All-Star break. But if McClain has like eight starts of this, like, he's probably going to be drafted at like SP3, right?
Yeah.
Maybe as a floor.
Yeah, I went out to Twitter and just watched that. I guess it's the curveball with
It was a sinker.
Okay, I was going to say, because it had arm side movement. Yeah, I'm just blown away that, like, so the curveball has a good amount of horizontal break. That pitch on the sinker is like, it says average horizontal break. That thing just leapt out to the right. Like, it looks like a video game. So yeah, it's super nasty. I think you're right, Steve. SP three, four. I mean, this is another guy that, you know, as long as the command that we saw is kind of an issue in the minors, like you were saying, if that is closer to what he's shown in four starts and even is like a manageable 8% walk rate, you'll take it. And from a volume standpoint, which is what you got to look at with these youngsters, he's up to 140 innings on the year. So, gosh, it's exciting. I mean, last year we were talking about Schwellenbach.
It's a good call. Yeah.
We were talking about Schwellenbach and Grant Holmes last year. And it seems like these two will be names that are talked about together like we're doing right now. But I think McClain is definitely quite a cut above. I mean, I'd love to end up with both of them, honestly. And I think that McClain is, they both fit the bill for ADP risers throughout the whole offseason.
In a vacuum, yes, I take McClain over Tong currently. I think at cost, I'll be having more shares of Tong. And maybe because I think there might be a twinge more upside, even though it's not as eligible, evident right now for Tong. Real quick, another would you rather from Jordan in the chat. Nolan McClain or Bo Chandler next season?
I mean, recency bias from just looking at this page right now, but I feel like McClain is starting to win me over. Just, I think what's most impressive to me is the amount of pitches he can turn to, because, you know, some of these that if it's an off day with, you know, the sweeper or something, it's like he's got curve, sinker, four seam. They're all good pitches. That's a tough call, but I mean, right now, when you look at what we've seen from Bubba Chandler in the bigs this year, it hasn't held up to what he's done in the minors. So I think I would lean McClain on that. What do you think?
Yeah. McClain for me. Yeah. Bubba, okay. Bubba's just, it seemed like he was ready and, you know, dominated early in the season. The Pirates didn't make the call, then he struggled and has looked pretty good in you know, one or two short, shorter stints out of the bullpen as like a bulk guy. But, and I still think there's a good amount of upside there, but give me the results and sort of the surprising, you know, or, you know, better results than expected, at least initially from McClain, despite him being a pretty high prospect there.
Yeah. And I think even though the change up for Bubba is like heralded, it seems like the curveball, we're seeing the results right now for McClain. Like we're not, there's more of a proven, albeit short, track record. So yeah, that's where I would go with that one. All right. We got a handful of other names we're going to get to, some that start to become more debatable, but we're going to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, moving right along to a name we talked about just on the last show. It's Trevor Rogers, who was one that we said, like we just did for Tong, that like we got to watch closely what happens in his remaining starts, because not only has he looked, you know, Cy Young-esque with his 90 innings of a 1.39 ERA and a 0.82 whip, but when we look for what has changed from the Trevor Rogers struggles for several years, it's really hard to nail down, you know, what is distinctly different. Obviously a new environment with the Orioles. We know that there's talent there and there has been for a while, but it just looked like nothing was clicking for a long time. And this season, I think what we had deduced last time is that, you know, the arm angle was there, but like I think the velo is up a little bit, right? But overall, we're seeing fantastic results for Trevor Rogers. Going back to some of the arm slot stuff we were looking at, like it's just, he's been a head scratcher for me. I know you were a little bit higher on Rogers and said you could see him as, was it an SP3 territory for him as well? I guess I'm still stumped on this one, Steve, but I do think that he's just 27 years old. He's been an elite fantasy player in the past. You got to go as far back as 2021. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing that again now. So what do we think of Rogers here? Is this the real deal? And why do you think he'll be a riser?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of just trusting results and the fact that he's done it before and it looks like he's unlocked something. He is, you know, perplexing, right? Like when you look at the Lance Brzozowski write-up, who dives into the arsenal as deep as anybody, right? He was talked about how the Orioles changed his fastball distribution in the Marlins. With the Marlins, he was 43% four-seam, 50% sinker to righty. With the Orioles, he's been more sinker than four-seam to righties. But the both of those pitches don't grade well by Stuff Plus. One of them is a minus-minus pitch, as Lance put it, and the other is just a minus pitch. Right. And so he's kind of just they kind of said, OK, and the sinker is slightly better than the four seam. Right. So that's what their logic is. Just throw the better pitch. Right. Even if it's not great, more, and it's worked. So it is perplexing. I know we talk, I don't want to spend too much time on Rodgers because, we talked about him a bunch last week and we kind of threw our hands up a little bit. But that being said, it's hard to argue with the results and what they're getting out of him. It's super impressive what he's done, and I'm sort of hesitantly leaning in. He does have there are some interesting metrics on his pitcher list page, right? Like the strikes minus ideal contact race. He's ninth in the big leagues for that. At 54.9%, his pitch level average, the ERA indicator for PLV is 282. So that sort of backs up, a good ERA, right? At least, and he is getting a lot of whiffs at a 13.1 swing strike rate. So the sum may be better than the parts, but it seems like that's okay.
Yeah. And I mean, lefties always have a little bit of a bump on just, showing up, keeping people off rhythm and everything. But yeah, the swing strike rate back in that great 2021 year was 14%. This is as high as it's been, it looks like, on at least across two teams this year. Last year it was down at an 8.7 and it's up to 12.1%. It looks like, just from the FanGraphs page. So yeah, it's he has a few good pitches. So I don't want to knock it. It's just I'll be curious to see who is around him. I'm not necessarily in love with the Orioles' track record on development, but I guess Kyle Bradish was
another lefty, right? And that's sort of been Nick's thing, like a lefty with consistent changeup. And
that's right.
That's what Rodgers has right now.
That's right. Okay, well, let's keep it moving because we did talk about him last show, but this one is interesting, Steve, and he's a guy that I kind of picked up as a streamer and just couldn't find an excuse to drop him. It's Brian Bayo, who, again, we're not too far removed from being excited for the pitcher when he got called up, and then it was really quickly a bad version of E-Rod or something. Like, it was just Toby-esque, and this year, the back of the baseball card looks great as he's now with 146 innings, a 3.07 ERA, and a 1.23 WHIP. The WHIP's not great, just 112 strikeouts in that time, but he is a case of the pre-All-Star, post-All-Star, because his WHIP has gone down from 128 to 115. The strikeouts, I think, have bumped up a little bit, but most of all, he is kind of fits into that Ranger Suarez type of mold. Like, he's pretty good at inducing soft contact. I know that there's been studies that that's more of a hitter thing. It's how sticky is that for pitchers, but 82nd percentile ground ball rate. Like, there are elements of Bayo that feel like it's good oatmeal this year, maybe not a 3.07 ERA. His xERA is like a 4.3, so over a full run higher than that. But most exciting is that he rolled out that new cutter second month of the season, and it seems like it's just taken a step up every month. It was like he introduced it and it was a 5% usage, then a 16% in his one start in September, it's been up to a 40%, or I'm sorry, a 27% usage with a 40% whiff rate. So, you know, you love to see the evolution that he's adding something when he needed to. Just 26 years old, obviously a good ball club. I'm always a soft, like the fact that he like trained with Pedro and he talked about how he wanted to, you know, mm-hmm. he didn't want to be the Pedro. He wanted to be better. He wanted to be his own Brian Bale. Like it's the Kobe fan in me that I love that like competitive edge. But for a while it was like, none of that matters if you don't have the goods. And it looks like he's starting to evolve to where now he has five pitches in his arsenal. And I think he could be kind of a wily option. I just wonder, does he fit the mold for Helium? Because he's not like a huge swing and miss guy. But talk to me about Bayo. I've enjoyed rostering him for 6-8 weeks. But I'm curious where he would land in drafts next year. But what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be a Helium guy. I think he's a good steady back of the rotation guy. And it seems like he's finally gotten to like a groove here for 2 months where, you know, we saw glimpses of it a few years ago with Bayo, right? The Red Sox extended him early. Like, there was a lot of hype with him as a prospect. And I don't think those will ever really be met as far as him actually being, like, an ace, right? Like, you know, I'm talking, like, the 57 innings he had in 2022 that looked pretty good. And then, you know, the 2023 where he, you know, kind of improved a little bit, and last year the kind of wheels fell off and was kind of like an afterthought this season. That being said, it's hard to get super excited about a guy that hasn't had a strikeout rate above 22% in the majors. His most success this year is at 18.3%. So, you know, I think it's going to be easy to look at, you know, this 3.07 ERA on the year is a bit of an outlier. He's on a good run. Like, this is like a slightly better Vargas role for me, right? Like, he's been good. There's not really much to it. Like, this is much, like, this, I'd much rather have Trevor Rogers than Brian Bayo. Would you agree with that?
Yep. I would agree there. I think he just needs to take a step forward. Like, I think the best case scenario, which I know this is especially lofty, just, and you know, it's a different pitcher, but thinking about these kind of ground ball specialists who have taken a step forward, it's like, I don't know, like a Christopher Sanchez, or
he doesn't have the swing and miss that those guys have, right? Like, his swing strike rate is 8.7% this year. Talk about Rogers, that there's question marks. He's at a 13% swing strike rate.
But my thought is, did Sanchez always have that? You know what I mean? Like, when he came up, sure. Just looking at, like, I guess 2021 and 2022, Sanchez was a 22% K rate and a 19% rate. So you would need, and he's evolved, right? I mean, granted, he has 7 feet of extension and,
when Sanchez has been in the rotation, he's had a 12 and 11, and now this year when he's been elite, a 13% swing strike rate. So it's always been a little bit higher.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, so Bayo needs to really like retool a secondary. He needs a superb swing and miss pitch, and then I think he'll have our attention. Like right now, the changeup has a 33% whiff rate. That's the top, but like you can't have a sweeper that's, you know, not even at league average on swing and miss and expect to be like a fantasy stud. So I think, you know, it's early. What I would say about Bayo is that you can't argue that results wise, he's made a big step forward this year. And I think he's a grinder. So if he adds or kind of introduces a new sweeper or like a slider that actually can get some whiffs, I'll start to get really interested. But for now, because what's the velo at real quick? Last thing I want to check. Yeah, I mean, the sinker's 95 and change. Like, that's not bad. And that's what he leans on for all those ground balls. So it's like if you have that as kind of a floor and a deep arsenal, you're just missing your swing and miss stuff, which is a big if on if he can evolve that. But let's move along to Sandy Alcantara. This is another segue, because Steve, I know I was commiserating to you that like I barely missed the playoffs, and then of course my team looked like they would have just cruised through the first round. And a lot of the only thread of hope I had was that Alcantara I had picked up, and what an August he had with a 103 whip, finally brought the ERA under four and had a strikeout per inning. Like, it just felt like he had four or five starts in a row that looked like vintage Alcantara. No spring hen. It'll be a age 30 season next year. But I know there was a lot of hype and buzz on Sandy coming into the year, and everybody thought that he would be dealt at the deadline. And, you know, now you look at kind of the entire body of work, and it's like, I think the first half you have to say was just like brutally unlucky, because it's another one that I had a hard time pinning down exactly what he changed. Like, it's not like it was a huge pitch mix change or like a huge ramp up of velo. The walk rate did come down quite a bit, which of course helped for a guy that doesn't like strike out the lineup. But other than the walk rate, a lot of the stuff just looks similar. And when you look at his splits, just crazy that first half he was a 7.22 ERA and second half at 3.16 ERA. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not sure I've ever seen something that drastic with such a large sample size. So yeah, Sandy could be one that, you know, I could argue it either way. I could see him kind of starting with a higher ADP because of the second half, and then people fading off of it because, you know, it's starting to become a pick that's not that sexy around names, you know.
It even wasn't like when he was like the best pitcher in the league, right? Right, like, yeah. It was kind of like, you know, Sandy Alcantara, like, you know, it's kind of like the volume. You know, don't worry, he doesn't have a strikeout per inning, but he's going to get 10 innings and 200 right. strikeouts, you know.
Yeah, he's like the top pitcher going at like pick 40 or something. Yeah. But yeah, what do you think on Sandy? It's been a crazy year.
I think there is going to be a decent buying opportunity here. Like, I like just the general rule of thumb of buying a pitcher the second year after Tommy John. True. I like that his stuff has looked good, like, from the second he came back. Like, in spring training, there was a lot of hype on Sandy because he was hitting 99, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this is great. Like, you know, we always know Sandy's command is going to be there. He's hitting 99. Like, let's go. I was excited about him this draft season. Raw, you know, that didn't turn out to be right, but I don't think that it means that you should be out on him fully again this year just because of what happened. I think having a healthy off season will be super important. Being able to do what he does in his routine to get, you know, being a command guy. You know, I know Trevor May has talked about how in the recovery from Tommy John, sometimes you lose those habits that lead to good command because you're not able to consistently throw off the mound. Yeah, you're throwing, but you're throwing on flat ground, and you develop these bad habits. You're throwing, but you're rehabbing and learning how to, you know, use those muscles again and developing bad habits when you're compensating and, you know, leaning on other things that you may not have need to lean on before. So I think that having a normal off season will be more important than most. So I already can tell that I don't know if he's going to be a riser, but I am going to be very interested in Sandy Alcantara in year two post TJ. And I'm pretty excited because the stuff is back because of how good he's been in the second half. I think he could be a pretty good buy, especially if people just, you know, you sort of forget these narratives on the year when you're in the offseason mode, and they'll see an ERA that starts at the 5 and a whip that starts at the 1-2 and mm-hmm. compare that to, you know, not as impressive, you know, 184 innings in 2023 and potentially be out on Sandy. But, it's definitely someone that will have my attention in draft season next year.
If he lands around McLean, do you feel like I would guess that McLean will have a little bit
pricier. It'll depend on who my first two pitchers are, right? Like, if I have, like, you know, more of a sure thing, I'll probably lean towards
the upside.
Towards the upside of McLean. If I have, you know, a few riskier you know, guys that I maybe drafted at SBQs that are younger that I think have ceiling. Maybe I'll take Sandy Alcantara.
Okay. Okay. I like it. Well, let's move to Quinn Priester here, who is the next on our list. And he is another one that's had a good second half in comparison, but really a pretty good year all around. I mean, the whip is slightly elevated. Some of that's from the walk rate. He's also not a huge strikeout rate guy, sub 20% K rate. But the results have been pretty impressive in terms of keeping runs off the board. First half, he had a 3.55 ERA. Second half, he's been 4-0 with a 2.76 ERA. Just as like the game log, you know, scenario goes, he had a great 10 strikeout outing, shutout against the Dodgers in LA. So that was definitely like the high point of the season for him. In July, it's looked not as salivating in terms of like the strikeouts per, but Priester is another really good ground ball rate guy. And, yeah, I just feel like his name was kind of on the radar for a while with like Pittsburgh. I remember, mm-hmm. you know, Saris would talked about him for a while, and it seems like he's been right there with Milwaukee's great season as just like found gold. But when you look at the arsenal, it's kind of tough to point to what exactly is like the most exciting part. I mean, his top whiff pitch is his curveball, but he only throws it 9% of the time. Doesn't have like huge velocity. So talk to me about Priester and what you're liking under the hood here.
Yeah, it's been impressive, and probably more so, in July, right? He had that amazing run, but I mean, you know, his most recent start, he went 6 innings, 0 hits, 3 Ks. And, you know, it was kind of like throw your shoulders out, shrug your shoulders. It's like, how is he doing this?
He just keeps doing it. Yeah.
There's nothing that jumps off the page. You know, with Rodgers, it's more the swing strike rate, the strike minus ideal contact rate. Yeah, the PLA, there's really not much of that's there for Quinn Priester. So I don't know. I feel like it might be easy to sort of push away the results and fade this one, right? You know, you see a whip that's worse than the 3.28 ERA, you know, a middling strikeout rate. There's not really much that I can get behind, but the results are hard to argue with, right? Like, mm-hmm.
The introduction of the cutter this season, I think, at least something to point to, where like last year it was just a show me pitch at like 1%. This year it's up to 18%. So I know it's one of those that pitch doesn't look great, but the other pitches got better once he introduced it and throws it to lefties a ton. But yeah,
I think he's like a Toby with upside, right? Like he may go on those runs where he has the 11 strikeout game, like versus Dodgers. But like with that, he got like 6 strikeouts on his sinker that he threw 22% of the time. Like a lot of that's looking like, could that have been like something that the Dodgers didn't have in their scouting report, right? Like it seems like it's kind of a bit of smoke and mirrors with him. And like when he's dotting things, there's going to be great starts. When he's not, he doesn't have the stuff to get away with it and he'll get hit. But you know, it's definitely been impressive. That being said, the upside I think is a little bit limited on Quinn Priester, despite the, at times really interesting results.
Yeah. I think the playoffs, he'd be an interesting one to keep an eye on in the playoffs, right? It's like high pressure, ton of like scouting focus, all of that. So like, can he show up and deliver? Like, are there actual goods here, or has it just been a season of like attrition where he's just kind of getting it over the line? I mean, the ground ball rate is definitely the thing that you point to, that like that, you know, close to 60% ground ball rate is great. Like that's going to be great for
how sustainable is that though? You know, like if that goes down to like 48, like it's still pretty good, but like, you know,
Let's talk about Bayo or Priester real quick, because they're kind of similar.
I think I'd go Priester.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe that's not the right answer. I'm just like fatigued from Bayo and like wanted him to break out for so long.
Yeah.
Priester's sort of newer. It's interesting. The Red Sox had Priester earlier this year, right? Like they got him, and I think cut him or traded him to the Brewers, right?
Like a steal. I think I lean Bayo just because there's a little bit more depth of the arsenal, a little bit more velocity. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's kind of some weird X factor with Bayo where I'm kind of betting on him. I don't know why. Like, I just kind of think maybe it's me being a sucker for Pedro 2 decades later, but like, I just wouldn't be shocked if we see him to continue to make strides to becoming like a good strikeout pitcher. Like, you know, there was hype when he came up, so. Yeah. I guess same with Priester. So, good little section there. Trevor Rogers, definitely the standout. I think Sandy is probably in that tier, probably going a little bit after Rogers. I'm with you on that, Steve, that could be a sleepy one if the helium is not there. And then Bayo and Priester seem like kind of stabilizer, late, semi-high floor type of guys. We're going to take our second ad break. Got a few more names we'll get back to right after this. All right, so Steve, this is a name that, you remember those July shows where we're looking at strength of schedule and we're like, mm-hmm. All right, the Cubs are right at the top of this. Like, what pitchers could we take advantage of? Is it Colin Ray? Is it Cade Horton? And we were kind of looking at them both like, is there enough there to really be interested in? And then you turn around and see that Cade Horton in August went 5-1 with a 1.20 ERA and a 0.9 whip, with over a strikeout per inning for the first time of the season. So let this be a mental reminder for us all that next year we can't pay enough attention to the strength of schedule show. But yeah, I think so you look at those and it was like he had he survived Coors, but then he had the Angels. He did have the Brewers, but that one he only lasted 2 2/3 innings. Which is weird. Was that like a knock or something? Because he only gave up one run there.
I mean, maybe there was a rain delay in that one or something.
Yeah, possibly. That's kind of an anomaly. But then, the Orioles, he blanked the Orioles, blanked the Reds in Wrigley. Overall, Cade Horton's now at a 2.79 ERA and a 1.14 whip, which is pretty dang good. Just a 20% K rate, but that's looked better as the season has gone on. And this is another guy that had a pretty good amount of prospect hype. I feel like at least, you know, the name was on our radar for a while, Steve. I don't remember how high up he was in the organization, but sits around 96 with the four seamer, has a few other pitches he goes to. And for a guy that's just 24 years old, we haven't seen a ton of him. I think Cade Horton is kind of an interesting one, maybe slightly more so than Bayo and Priester, but what are your thoughts here?
Yeah. In the second half, 47 innings pitched, 44 Ks, 0.77 ERA, 0.81 whip via Underdog. Jake Arrieta is the only other Cubs pitcher since 1920 to allow four or fewer runs across nine starts. So an absolutely insane run. The underlying numbers on that, maybe not as encouraging. 24% strikeout rate, 8.1% strikeout, 8.1% walk rate, which is good. It's not something that would make you think that there's a 0.77 ERA across 47 innings. It's sort of a story to, twofold, right? Like, yes, those opponents matter, and, that's what contributes to those runs, right? But also, sort of to keep those guys in mind that did have decent prospect pedigree, right? Like, there was some hype around Horton when he came up. It didn't translate right away, and it's paying off now. There isn't like a big arsenal change or mix change or anything like that. He's just putting the ball in the zone more. He is striking his pitches a lot more. That's what Lance Prostowski said in his write-ups, and that's been the case that's led to success. And sometimes that is the case, right? Like, sometimes these – these guys get to the big leagues, they get hit around, maybe they start to nibble and lose faith in their stuff. I think that's kind of what is going on a bit with a guy we're talking about here, down here. The last name on our show is a little bit of a teaser, but it looks good. And I think, I think is has a little bit more upside than the Bayo, just because, and Priesters, just because there is an 11.8% swing strike rate. And that's something that I think you can build on, right? Like, as he, you know, tweaks another one of his pitches, right? He has that elite slider, as his fastball improves a little bit, as his command improves a little bit, as he adds another secondary that he can continue to trust, that's when 11.8% strikeout rate can balloon to like a 14% strikeout rate, and you got a really good starter on your hands. So I am pretty interested in Cade Horton going forward.
Yeah, there's more strikeout upside to point to. Like, throughout the minors, it was always double digit K per nine. Yeah. In terms of the individual pitches, like 60 grade slider, 50-60 changeup, and the changeup has a 50% whiff rate. So that's been excellent. I mean, just 12% of the time that he goes to that, but like, there's enough pieces here that it's like, you could see the Cubs, you know, they've gotten a lot out of guys. I mean, let's not forget that Justin Steele was kind of a pitcher that people wrote off. And I know that he's, you know, was much more of like the slider took a step forward. That's currently not like a strength for Horton necessarily. I mean, the sweeper has been good, but it's like his changeup is his best pitch. It seems like it just seems like there's enough here that is worth getting excited about. I think I would put him above Priester and Bayo. I think I still am kind of interested in the upside with Jonah Tong over Horton, though. What do you think of that little
head? Yeah, you're an extension guy. Of course you are.
Yeah.
I prefer Tong too, for sure.
Okay. I could see those guys both going in that, like, you know, 200 and beyond type of range, which is always exciting, but I like them both. Okay, going to the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Man, I would love to take a victory lap, Steve, because I distinctly remember pre-draft season. I was like, I mean, would you be shocked if Woodruff did it? Why is he going so late? And then I started getting really scared off by all the reports that, like, we've never seen someone with as rare of an injury that he has. I forget the exact description of his shoulder issue, but like, he is the biggest success story of anybody that's had that injury. But it's come in a weird fashion a little bit, because back of the baseball card looks great. 30% K rate, 6% walk rate. Like, you want to say, oh, well, this is Brandon Woodruff. He's back at age 32. But for a guy that kind of relied on multiple fastballs, almost like a Lance Lynn type of build, the velo has gone down, and yet the results haven't really suffered much. So what do you think of Woodruff here? This is such a different shape. I mean, maybe Alcantara is the best example, that it's like, it's a name we know, but age is starting to get up there, and you have to have questions with Woodruff about just durability and sustainability of what we're seeing this year. But what do you think on Brandon Woodruff? Hell of a season.
Yeah. I feel like I was guilty of convincing you there to pump the brakes there on Woodruff and maybe take some blame for that, because I was just so concerned with how, like, the velo readings in spring, even though he was pitching, and like, they had him on the backfields till like the last start in March, if you remember that, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was like injuries during the rehab process that delayed his return. But I mean, it looks good, at least results wise, right? But yeah, the stuff is diminished. He's sitting 93, and in his prime, he was sitting 96, 97. The swing strike rate is still good at 12%, but it's not what it was at 13 to 14% during his prime. But hey, his prime was like a top 3 to 5 pitcher.
That's true. Very true.
Brandon Woodruff was so, so good and like so underrated, in my opinion. He was a fantasy ace for a few years that like had an argument to be like the number one pitcher. I don't know if he ever really was, just because there was some guys that were always probably a little bit ahead of him, but he was as consistent as they could be and was truly, you know, one of the best pitchers in the game for a few years there. I don't think he'll get back to that, but I don't think that's too much of a knock. And I think he's been pretty damn good otherwise. And sort of how he's doing it is like, you know, old pitcher tricks, right? Yeah, his velocity is down, but he's throwing more sinkers and cutters. How do you, you know, compensate for diminished fastball velocity? Which hard pitch is coming? There's more pitchers and more cutters. There's more sinkers and more cutters. So, you know, it seems like his command is as good as it's ever been, right? So he's sort of making up for lack of stuff with command. And you can get away with that, and who knows, maybe he gets a tick back a year away removed from some surgery, and there is some upside there that does lead to healing, right? Like, if you come back into the spring and see reports of Brandon Woodruff sitting 95, oof, we're going to be super excited because of how good he's been this season, right? Despite the lack of stuff and the injuries that he's had to deal with. So,
what a dog.
Definitely an up arrow for me for Brandon Woodruff. Yeah.
It's, I mean, I freaking love it that it's just like in an age of one, velocity that like makes your arm fall off, and two, everything is like slider or some like crazy splitter. The fact that he is just like, nope, I've got like three heaters and a changeup, and I'm just going to stump you with how I sequence these, like location of them, some good movement.
Yeah, all my stuff grades are down. I'm still going to have a 30% strikeout rate. Don't care.
Yeah, it is awesome. And honestly, that type of mold, I mean, maybe that answers the question on sustainability, that it's like if he keeps this up throughout September, then you're seeing a guy with his control that, you know, that is a path for him to kind of have this, you know, we see someone like Scherzer who's just still doing it like deep into the 30s. Like Woodruff is not like a Hall of Fame like that, but yeah. I mean, he's definitely of that ilk that he's a pitcher's pitcher. And you're right, Steve, that he did it for what, 7 straight seasons where he was an out and out ace. So I think, I think I'm in on Woodruff. Would you say, is his ADP going to be the highest of the, no, probably behind Trevor Rogers, maybe around Nolan McLean?
I think he might be above both of them. Okay. Maybe closer to McLean. I think McLean is going to have a ton of hype.
So Woodruff,
I think Rogers, there may be some questions just based on, you know, some of the concerns that you've raised, but I think he'll be up there, especially just if he continues this in September. I mean, you just look at the numbers, it's a 30.1% strikeout rate, 6.4% walk rate, like, you know, a lowish left on base rate, like the swing strike rate is good. It's just the stealth grades that don't add up, but everything else that we look at as far as like underlying metrics and key performance indicators like that are all systems go, probably more so than basically anyone other than like the few small samples in Ton and McLean that we've talked about tonight.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I could see that. I could see a McLean and like that, you know, 85 to 100 helium and like Woodruff shortly after and having a tough call on like, oh, do I want to burn a 7th round pick on Woodruff? But I think I'd be here for it if that is the case. So, we'll see. It's always fun just throwing darts right now. It could be totally different when the early numbers come back. So, Steve, you teased out this last one, but Jack Leiter is a name that we've talked about up and down and up and down the past 2 years. And overall, it's looked good, not great on the season line. The strikeout numbers have been good enough at like a strikeout per inning. A 3.74 ERA is good, if not just like above average. It's the WHIP that has come with like the 11%+ walk rate. The WHIP is at 1.29. That is, frustrating for Leiter. I think we all at moments thought he would be a stud, but if you just split it out to what he's done in the second half, it definitely looks like he's finding that rhythm. In the month of August, a 2.76 ERA. The whip was still up there quite a bit, but 35 strikeouts over 29 in the third innings. He's another extension guy, Steve, so I love that. And he's got the velo to go with it. Leiter at multiple stops has felt like, how can this guy miss? It's just been a little bit frustrating to like put it all together for a sustained run, but I think it's safe to say we're kind of seeing that in the second half. What do you make of Leiter? Where does he kind of land on the hype train that we foresee in the off season?
I think you said this about Trevor Rogers for me, about like a guy that I just like could never give up.
Yes.
That I'll always,
you are guilty
to.
Of that. Yes.
Leiter is like my new guy for that. Like I will always be interested in Jack Leiter. I can't tell you how many times I've streamed him over the last like 3 years, right? Has he been up since 2023, or
is this the new like Nick Lodolo situation?
Yeah. It's just from last year, but still, yes. And it's just because his stuff is so good, right? Like he's got an amazing fastball, an amazing slider. The changeup looks good, even though, you know, it looks at like times that he can't command it. He's even introduced a sinker that he's kind of ditched a little bit recently during this little breakout run here. But all the tools are there. Just a matter of him to put it together. And he's sort of slowly doing it, right? Like since July, it's a 3.04 ERA, but a 1.31 whip, a 28% strikeout rate, but a 12.4% walk rate. So, you know, it looks like it's happening with some question marks. Like, is it happening? But that being said, I'm still interested. I'll always lean towards these guys just because the stuff is so good, and the fastball especially, right? Like when you have a fastball that's just this good that you, in theory, could just pound the zone with it and guys could miss it, like that's the sign of a dominating pitcher, what could be a dominating pitcher. That's why I'll always be interested in Jack Leiter, and I think it's kind of happening here down the stretch. It was another good start today versus the Diamondbacks. And, you know, it was like throughout the first half of the year, it's like, how does this guy have this much stuff, but like literally can't strike anybody out, right? Like Jack Leiter had like a 10% strikeout rate through like the first few months of the season. Maybe that's a little bit hyperbole, but not far off. But it finally looks like it's like, okay, Jack Leiter is supposed to have a 28% strikeout rate, and he finally does. Sure, the walk rate is a little bit high, but you could live with that if, you know, he's not going to give up home runs and too much hard contact and strike out the world with on base. But it looks like it finally could be coming together for him. And if it does continue through September, I'll definitely be aboard this hype train for him in the offseason, right? Mm-hmm. There kind of already has been a bunch for Leiter, right? So we'll see.
No, I like it. I mean, my like rose-tinted glasses comparison, and I guess the control is probably the biggest difference, but I go back to like an early, like 2022 Logan Gilbert, where like we love the fastball, we love the extension. He didn't have the splitter yet. It was like slider, curve, change, which is, you know, pretty much what Leiter has, but the fastball was the foundation along with the extension. And it's like, if you start there, it's really just about like unlocking that slide. I really think it's as simple as if he can get that slider to be like a plus slider, as opposed to like what I think you would probably say is, at least from a swing and miss standpoint, like a below average slider for his number two pitch. If he can evolve that for a guy who's as, you know, talented and young as he is. I mean, 25, it feels like we haven't seen a ton of him still, though. That was just 150-odd innings. I think if he can unlock the slider, it's like, where's the limit, right? It's almost like he would instantly become, you know, an SP2 type of build. That said, the walks are also the difference on that Logan Gilbert, like that 2022 year, where a lot of their stuff looks similar. Logan Gilbert had a 6% walk rate. Yeah. Jack Leiter has an 11%.
His command was always pretty good, if not elite.
During
his peak. So.
But I'm with you that there's enough here to chase it, at least for another season or two, until we like throw our arms up and we're like, is it never going to happen? And it turns into Giolito and happens 2 years after you're off. But yeah, I think that's a great one. It's hard to figure out where Leiter falls with the rest of these names. What do you think in terms of like ADP and the rise? Like, he's definitely after McLean, Woodruff.
Yeah. Tong even, I would think. Yeah, right?
Maybe that's the range.
Yeah, maybe around, the Jonah Tong range.
Around
yeah.
Tong and, yeah. and Horton.
Yeah.
So would you rank those three? Would you go Tong, Leiter, Horton?
Tong, Leiter, Horton, with the caveat that I like all three.
Okay. I like it. Well, this is a great little primer, because we're not far off from having end of season full episodes that we're talking about SP tiers and late targets and all that stuff. Cannot wait personally, but I know you're still in the grind, Steve. That'll be great for those of you guys sticking with us. We got some really fun shows in the coming weeks, so don't bail. I know the other fantasy sport that should not be named is ramping up, but we're doing some of our accountability shows, which are always some of the coolest, where we go back and look at, you know, our buy low episodes in April. You know, definitely our chalkboard show, where we looked at our picks for the season, and we kind of look back and see who did break out, who was an appropriate call on buy low versus who was somebody that we were waiting all year for them to break out. So it's really fun at the end of the year to do this rear view mirror. And I think it tells us a lot going into the off season. So you can kind of be ahead of the crowd on, you know, what ADP is and formulate our own opinions, because we do it every year. And I feel like our initial reactions kind of come full circle, where we're like, why did we move off that guy? We liked him in October. So it'll be a fantastic few recap shows in the not too distant future. But any closing thoughts, Steve? I know you're in the hunt over there.
No, just exciting. I'm glued to every single bit of my matchups here, but looking forward to wrapping up the season. I know we'll officially do that like once the year ends, but I think this will be a nice few weeks here to go back in those shows. We always, I know we do get to them for the most part, but they actually, I think it's a great time to sort of still talk about this year and look back. Well, we'll leave October for starting to go ahead and give out some all fantasy teams and things like that. And yep. Talk about our favorite performances, all that too. So, fun time of year. And September, I mean, real baseball is great too, right? Like there's a lot of playoff races and interesting stuff going on too. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more than we do, around this time of year, just because playoff baseball is super fun.
Yeah, it is. Padres making a little push. There's some names that we just got to zoom out and look at. Juan Soto, like what he's been up to. We had a fun homer prediction show. Remember where we were looking at how many would get to 50 and everything. So yeah, it'll be a fun September. I'm looking forward to it. But thank you guys for joining us. We will still be on weekly up till the end of September. I will be out of the country last week of September, so I'll probably have to miss that one, but then we get into the fun off-season stuff. But that's it for episode 192, talking about 2026 starting pitcher risers. Thanks for talking baseball with us, guys.
Thanks, guys. Later.